Hello, folks, and welcome to the Side Adventure number 2. This is our feedback show when we get lots of emails and we read them out to you. I'm DM Vince, along with DM Mike, and back by popular demand, DM Liz, who made a guest appearance at the end of the last show.
I did.
Yeah.
She snuck in.
I know you were all looking forward to an all-man show that I ruined it at the end.
Yeah.
Darn me.
I was getting tired of doing the fake Liz anyway, so.
She does that.
I do.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so let's just head straight into the nitty-gritty and go to the first email.
Email. Our first email is from Andrew, who's a regular writer. I suppose we could call him a friend of the show.
Hi, Andrew.
Andrew.
And he says, "Hi, folks. I liked your all-mail episode. Lots of interesting subjects."
That's all M-A-I-L episode, by the way, not all M-A-L-E.
Yeah.
I'll bet he liked that one, too.
Yeah,
probably.
Sure. Yeah.
"If you can find a copy of X8 to read through, go for it. It is James Bond on a tropic island with natives, a volcano, and a nefarious villain. It's almost as much fun just reading through it. I would write you a review, but this guy's is better." And he sends us a link, which I believe is already placed up on our homepage.
Yeah, Mark Burtonshaw's reviews is part of our front page.
There you go. Just go right to his site, and you can put in this module X8, and you can find the review very easily.
Yeah.
Well, just from the brief description, it does sound pretty cool.
I have that module. Ha ha.
Yeah,
that's right. Thanks, Andrew. We appreciate the link, and everyone appreciates it. And you're right, it's a great module. Yeah.
Okay. Next email from Chris.
Yeah,
and he says, "Colors. Yes, it was the website colors." And this is a response to the previous email that we read in our last mailbag episode talking about the skins.
Did you notice something about his email?
Notice what?
That his email is S-O-D, and then the rest of his email, which I won't say out, but it's sod. And it's an English email address, so...
Well, he's British. He can do that.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's brilliant.
Yep.
So,
bet he watches Doctor Who.
You had to go there, Mike, huh?
Hey, it's mandatory.
It wasn't last episode.
Which is, means we have to do it twice here.
Yeah.
So he says, "Yes, it was the website colors. They are better now. What is my country of origin? For a clue, check my spelling." I think we might be in the UK area. He goes on to say, "Sample dungeons. Played the one in Holmes prior to B1. Wonderful experience, and which male of a certain age could ever forget Lumunda the Lovely? Especially after the charisma description. Holmes, please read it. No pictures, just pure imagination." Port
she
Town
was
became...
Hot.
Are we getting into that again?
Yeah, I guess so.
"I can't leave you guys alone for a day."
Sorry.
"Port Town became the initial base of operations for my characters. As for the Red Book sample dungeon, read that in the late 1990s and thought, wow. Light sources. Why wax the stones in? Could have used glue, e.g. horse, fish, goat, even cheese glue. Gold, 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 as the final line of the dwarf song goes. So, what value is it? I used the silver standard, introduced in White Dwarf Mag as a basis of the cost of items. So, average wage was, say, £14,000 in the real world. This translated to 1,400 gold pieces. So, a silver was worth a pound, and a gold 10 pounds. So, the starting money of a character was a lot of money to a peasant. In any adventure I ran, commercial or otherwise, I downgraded gold to silver, silver to copper, and copper to pennies. This then meant that the characters averaged about 6 sessions to progress, although first to second was between 1 and 2 sessions, with bonus XP for small tasks done, e.g. roleplay. Also, money changers took at least 10% of the gross value, plus another 10% if converting to or from gems.
Wow.
Did you ever adjust the encumbrance to make coins weigh less, e.g. 100 to the pound? PC lethality. They only died when they got cocky, overambitious, or foolhardy. Usually, 1 every 6 sessions. Standard equipment and modules. I think I first saw a basic Cleric Fighter Magic User pack in Before the Lost City.
Ooh, that's good module.
Technology. Ran Gloryhole Dwarven Mine, and the players find some noisemakers, guns, and did not relate to them as weapons, just as a mining tool to test for collapsing tunnels. Sod it, that's all for now. Apart from, quote, not getting Doctor Who, end quote, deletion is in order. Suppose you didn't get Blake 7 either.
Hey, we love Blake 7. Liz and I, anyway.
Yeah, we were big Blake 7 junkies, too, when they ran them on our PBS station.
I have nothing to say.
you might like Blake 7, Vince. It was very dark.
I've never heard of it.
That was pretty cool.
I don't know. Okay. The answer is question. No. Did you adjust the encumbrance to make coins weigh less? I think I might have done this. I don't think I really paid much attention to the actual coinage. I mean, unless it was something outrageous, like there's 1,000, you know, copper pieces and they were trying to drag 12 bags out or something.
So. Yeah, that's generally how I've always run D&D is, you know, common sense.
Yeah.
I used to keep a bag of 400 pennies for easy access so I could say, okay, this is, you know, a bag of maybe 75, you know, depending on what it's supposed to be. You know, this is how much your gold coins weigh. Ka-thunk. Now, if you've got 150, that's like 2 of those bags. Realistically, how many are you going to carry?
50. Well, you weren't asking me, sorry.
And do absolutely nothing else, yes.
Oh, I don't know. Okay.
But let's see, what were the other questions?
We're talking about light sources using glue as opposed to wax. The standard equipment...
Well, first thing, yeah, that's true. I guess I was thinking of people making the infamous flashlights while in the dungeon.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But yeah, if they prepared them ahead of time, yeah, glue would be ideal.
Mm. I think I also talked about the thing going flying across the room, too, when you opened it. But
well, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I like his 10% for the gross value, another 10% converting to and from gems. Cool. Good idea.
I think the 10% in original D&D was pretty much mandated for changing coins. I don't know about gems, though, but it is very reasonable.
Yeah, why not charge a fee for gems?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, that's one of those you have to have a very skilled person to be able to say what it's really worth. And, you know, it's either 10% or basically allow each jeweler to rip you off.
True. And
although I think...
Yeah. Hmm? Go ahead, Liz.
Oh, I was just going to comment. I seem to recall, at least in the past, that, Mike, didn't you also use the silver standard in your games for a while there? I don't know that you're doing it currently, but I know that there was a period of a few years where you were making silver.
I tried that, but what my big mistake was is I did a silver standard, but I left everything costing gold. That was just too rough. I mean, you got starting fighters wandering around with a short sword and a leather hat, you know, because they can't afford anything.
Hey, leather hats are awesome.
Okay.
All right. What's next?
So yeah, I mean, I think a silver-based economy is good, but you've got to apportion everything, at least as far as normal things you buy as well. Otherwise, yeah, you run into real problems.
Mm. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, everything else is about the standard equipment, his views on PC lethality, and the technology in Gloryhole Dwarven Mine, which I've never played in.
I'm not going to comment.
It's interesting. I've got it. Maybe one day I'll run it. There are some areas that are just kind of goofy, and then others that are just disturbingly dark.
That seemed to be kind of par for the course with some of the Judges Guild stuff. You could get some really weird things, and then other times it's like, oh my god.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. Is there anything made by Roll Aids for the original system, or was that only Advanced?
You mean Mayfair's?
I think it was Mayfair's Roll Aids.
Mayfair's Roll Aids? Yeah, it was all Advanced.
Oh, okay.
They got taken to court for it, too, but they won, so... I think I got most of those Rolaid stuff. They were, I don't know if they're still, but they were selling like these big packs of them. Real cheap.
Aren't Rolaids the stuff you use for like stomach flus and, oh, never mind.
That too.
Yeah.
And you see, you can use them for D&D, but when you're done, you can chew them up.
Yeah, that's
and they're really good for an upset stomach.
That's what I thought. Okay. Next.
And we will tell you all about Blake 7 after we finish recording the episode.
If you dare.
I'm hitting
Well, I gotta go, guys.
Yeah, I gotta go. Look at the time. Oh. Next email.
Next email. Okay. Julian Grimm, who has informed me, thankfully, how to pronounce his last name. Shear. Oh. Josh Shear. Sorry, Josh, for mangling it. I'll do better now. Josh Shear. Okay. Josh says, the rest of the story on my doppelganger trick is that the party was getting out of control and causing many problems in the game world. I chose the party member at random with a die roll. This was a one-time event that would not be repeated. I don't remember what level the party was at the time, but I believe they were around the third level area when I did this. The event worked rather well, and after the attack, the players calmed down their playing, and the control went back to the DM.
Wow.
Yay!
Sounds like he wrote his own little Return to the Tomb of Horrors there.
Yeah. Well, at least he did it randomly, so, you know, no favoritism.
I had to do that, actually. Myself, maybe about 10 years ago, we were just getting into playing an edition that shall not be named post-2000. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, well, we were playing the adventure. Me and my friend Chris, who is now out in, I don't know, whatever land. I haven't talked to him in a while except on Facebook. We were co-DMing a game, so we would swap back and forth every week. He would DM 1 week, and then I'd play, and then I'd DM, and then he'd play. Swapping our characters in and out, which was fine, because, you know, we were the DMs.
Was it the same campaign, just...
Yeah, same campaign. We just rotated every other week because we both wanted to play and we both wanted to DM.
Right. That was pretty typical for my experience, too, when I started DMing. Yeah. Or playing D&D, I mean.
And we both pretty much played the same type of character. We were both fighter-type character. So it's not like we really lost a lot. And there's always that disbelief of, well, what happened to this character during that time? Whatever. We walk past that. But what happened was there was a big, large snowstorm, and we couldn't play 1 weekend. And the weekend before, we had given out all these magical items and things that the party didn't know what was. So what happened? All the little munchkins that were in our group showed up that week and decided they were going to DM, and they gave out all the wondrous items from the book.
Oh, how nice.
So we came back with characters with, like, I don't know, the Manual of Strength and the Tome of Intelligence and things like that, boosting all their characters up beyond all belief. So
the
we had
Cliff Notes version.
What?
Cliff's Note? Oh, wait. I'm showing my age. Never mind.
The Cliff Notes version?
of the manuals.
Oh, ha 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 ha. Old fart. Anyway,
you and your kids with your D20s.
Yeah.
I played with chits.
Oh, wow.
We were thankful.
Not thankful.
No, we really weren't.
You want to keep that thing to yourself, right? So what we did was the party became so out of control that there were like 12 people in the party and we had like half dragons running around in the party that Chris and I sat down one week and we devised our own adventure just to just slaughter the whole entire party. And the plot line involved Strahd leaving the Domain of Dread.
Mm.
And he did get out in our campaign. Everybody died. And they all got pissed and went to go play Warhammer. They did.
Yeah, Warhammer is much more...
Yeah.
Much less lethal.
Literally, they got up after they died and they walked over to the Warhammer tables and they started playing that and they never came back.
So was this at a con?
What?
Was this at a convention or?
No, this was at the local comic book store when we were at the time.
Oh, okay.
Because they had a gaming room.
Well, it sounds like it wasn't much of a loss.
No, actually, what happened from there was that was the last week we ever, myself and Chris, ever actually played there. We actually went to a friend's house from there on in because we couldn't take playing with the Munchkins anymore. But that's my little story on this.
Okay.
I guess I just trailed off, but I guess it related to the email.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
DM's taking it back.
Take it back. Do, 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 do. Sorry.
Just like Doctor Who would have done.
All right, Mike, that was reference two, and that's the last reference you get.
That's the last reference I get. That's right.
And Liz gets.
No. That wasn't in the statement.
Next email.
I'll try to restrain myself.
Yeah.
Our next email is from Micah Adams.
Micah.
And he writes, "Hello, everybody.
Hello.
First of all.
Hello.
Sorry.
First of all, thanks for this podcast.
You're welcome.
I personally blame you for my total lack of productivity this week as I was catching up on the backlog of adventures and interviews that you've put together.
You're welcome.
You're welcome and sorry.
I started playing D&D in 1994 with some friends in middle school. The second edition reboot had just been released, and for my birthday in 1995, I received a full set of the second edition books and hastily started running a game.
Oh, I feel sorry for it. No, I'm kidding. Cool. He hastily ran a game. Does that mean he pretty much just said, aha, let's play?
No, it means he pulled out B2 Keep on the Borderlands.
Yeah.
Well, I can hope.
I was expecting a Doctor Who reference there, but okay.
No more from me.
Okay. Go ahead, Liz.
It had been a while since I ran a game. Finishing college, getting married, and completing my master's degree derailed me for a while. Congratulations, Micah.
That damn master's degree.
Recently, though, I started a new group with some like-minded individuals who don't have as much experience with D&D as I do. I proposed a crazy idea. Mm-hmm. What if we played through every edition of Dungeons & Dragons? It's a lofty goal, and perhaps a little silly, but it was something we were willing to try. With recent developments, though, we've found ourselves content with playing Swords and Wizardry for the time being. Once my gamers experience the joy of the ease of creating characters in this system, I think we're probably not going to look back, if not for a while. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to more interesting sodcasts and interviews. Anybody going to GaryCon this year? Thanks, M. And he has a postscript that he is Larkwin on the Dragon's Foot forums.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Larkwin.
Hey. I know that name. I've seen it.
Yeah.
No. Unfortunately.
We'd like to.
Yeah.
But it's going to have to get closer to the date before we know for sure.
And it all comes down to, will we have the money to do it?
Yeah.
I could say I'm definitely not going to GaryCon as much as I'd love to go to GaryCon. I'm not. I'm going to... Actually, GaryCon's in March, right?
Late February, early March, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'll be going to Icons in April, so I can't go to GaryCon in March.
Ah, yes, where you're going to be part of a panel.
Shh.
Broadcasting from radio.
Different podcast, different time, Mike.
But the same Vince.
The same Vince, just a different podcast.
That's right.
Anyway.
Yeah, we'd like to go. Yeah,
hell yeah.
And in fact, I would have said 2 months ago, I'd have said no chance. But now that I actually got a job teaching, we might be able to make it. Fortunately, that's kind of the off season in Lake Geneva, so it'll only cost one arm and a leg to stay at a hotel there rather than the usual two.
What was my curious? I mean, I don't know a lot about Second Edition, but what was the reboot of Second Edition?
Well, I think what he's referring to is in the mid-90s, They kind of took Mystara and all that other stuff that was pretty much Basic Expert or Beckme and just turned it into Second Edition.
Oh, okay. Was it those books that had like the full color pictures on it as opposed to, what was it, the black books with the red writing on it?
I think so.
Because remember they had the player's handbook and the DM's guide, they were all black, and it had like the red writing with the TSR logo in the middle.
Honestly, I can't say. I wasn't buying D&D stuff in the mid to late 90s.
That's why I vaguely remember that. I'm trying to remember if that was what it was. I have to. If he wouldn't mind writing back in and telling us what it looked like, or someone else can correct us. I wasn't a big second edition person, that's all. I have, I think, the basic three books, but I don't even know where they are.
Oh, we do too. It's in our game closet.
I know I have the player's handbook, the DM guide, and I think a monster manual. Was it monster?
The hardback?
I don't even know.
Or is it the big notebook with the three ring binder with the pages in it?
I didn't even bother with that. It was the hardback.
Yeah. So that's the monstrous manual.
I thought that was stupid, the three ring binder. I'm sorry. I thought it was dumb.
And yet, if you look at early issues of Dragon Magazine, right as first edition came out,
people were asking for it.
Yeah, fans were asking for that.
Why?
Weird. The idea was then TSR could just put out, you know, the sheets of monsters rather than different monster books, and you could just insert them.
So people were basically begging to give TSR money.
Yeah, basically.
Well, I think the idea was...
Go. What, Liz?
Go ahead, Liz.
I was going to say, I think what their idea was, instead of having to buy a brand new book every couple of years or so, TSR would just release maybe a packet of, say, 10 monsters or so, and you could just buy that packet for a fraction of the cost and insert it into the booklet that you already own. I'm thinking that's what in mind.
From
the hobby, gamers are cheap.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You're still buying the book no matter what way you look at it. I'd rather pay it all up front.
Well, no, because you get the same amount of monsters for less money, theoretically. Because you don't have the binding, the hardback, any of that. You've just got printed sheets with three holes in them.
Yay.
Apparently, everyone eventually agreed with you, but that was the original concept.
And that's,
yeah,
and thus
people
why
people wanted the concept, but when it came out, everyone just went, ah.
Yeah.
And thus why my friend found the second edition monstrous white-bound book in the garbage. And that's how he obtained his copy of it.
When was that?
I don't know, 10, 15 years ago?
Because I know in 2000 when the edition, the first edition that shall not be named, came out, most game stores were required to destroy all their second edition stuff. Contractually obligated if they were going to get third edition stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Tons of stuff was destroyed or thrown away or ripped up.
You know what, if I was a store owner and I got that, you know, I would just take all the second edition crap, put it in my back room, waited about a couple years, and shoved it up on eBay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, eBay didn't exist back then, did it?
I don't know. But it, on the other hand, if he sold it, he might be possibly, you know, legal action against him for it.
Oh, please. Back then? I don't know. Yeah. Whatever.
After the 90s with Lorraine Williams' TSR, everybody was jumpy. They didn't know that Wizards of the Coast or Hasbro would be just as bad or worse or better, you know. Yeah. I can understand and I agree, but I can see at the time why people would have been worried enough to just go ahead and destroy it. Which is why when you said that it was in the garbage can, that was my first thought.
You know what? Maybe that's what happened, because it was practically brand new. Like, it still had the cellophane wrapper on it and everything. So yeah. I bet that's what happened.
That is probably what happened.
Because he's like, oh my god, he actually found a whole collection of second edition that way.
Yeah, that would explain it.
And they were all in perfect condition. He's like, I can't believe someone threw this out. I'm like, oh wow, that's amazing. I guess apparently someone hated second edition that much.
Or
a store was throwing it out.
Yeah.
That's
but
weird.
But anyway.
I didn't know that. Okay, cool.
Yeah. It was weird, but it was required. Because they didn't want the competition. You know, if you were going to sell, you were going to sell this Dungeons & Dragons and nothing else.
Bah.
Exactly. Anyway.
No, we're not going to GaryCon.
We might go to GaryCon.
Yeah, okay.
News as it develops.
You heard it first.
Yes. Stay tuned to future podcast episodes to find out, will we go to GaryCon?
Does he have another email?
He does have another email. It's very brief. It's more like a postscript, actually. And he says, be sure to check out www.hexographer.com. This is some great software that I've found. It's awesome in producing your own hex maps. If you really like it, be sure to give the developer a couple of bucks for the pro version. Thanks, M. So, make your own hex maps with hexographer.com.
Cool.
You know, I don't like hex maps.
I don't often use them.
No, I've actually done with the alternative squares, even before it was popularized in the third edition. I used to always use, even back in first edition, when I play first edition games, there's the option of squares. I've always used the squares better than the hex.
Well, I remember buying a booklet that TSR had out at the time. It was basically an entire book of blank hex map pages.
Yeah.
So that you could make your own wilderness stuff. And I think I only ever used maybe the first four or five pages of that booklet, and I've still got it in our closet somewhere, practically brand new, tons of hex pages, unused.
Didn't TSR also develop the clear plastic one where you just threw the hex map over whatever map you had and it became an instant hex map?
Yeah, hex map overlay.
Yeah.
I think it came with the box World of Greyhawk.
Did it? Okay.
I think so.
I remember having that, never using it.
Yeah. Maybe it's the 70s board war gamer in me, but I like hex maps for wilderness. Now, in dungeons, I prefer graph paper.
Yeah.
Or buildings, but for wilderness, I just like the hexes.
Yeah.
You get more of a... You've got diagonal movement. So... And I wonder if that's why it was first used, too. Because, you know, everybody at TSR were wargamers. Gary was a regular contributing editor to Avalon Hill's General Magazine.
Hmm.
And I'm sure you don't know what I'm talking about.
Doctor Who.
I didn't say it. You did. Anyway. So, yeah. I wonder... So, yeah, I like hex maps for wilderness, but again, that might just be a holdover.
Hi, my name is Mike. I like hex maps.
Hey, my name is Vince, and I hate Doctor Who.
I don't hate Doctor Who. I just don't get Doctor Who. There's a difference between hating and not getting.
Well. Okay.
Move moving right along.
Yeah, come on, Liz, control the podcast already.
See what you missed down. From the last episode?
Down, boys, down.
You started.
Okay. Our next email.
As we're annoying Liz now.
Is from Rusty Shaver, otherwise known. Yes. He says, with Halloween fast approaching, how about a discussion or review of Tegel Manor? I'd love to hear you guys discuss it. Thanks. I think that's a pretty cool idea.
I love Tegel Manor.
Why don't I recognize this for some reason?
It was put out by Judges Guild. It's one of the first, not one of the first Judges Guild products. It is a huge haunted house.
And again, like we discussed a little earlier, it's a mix of goofy and lethal. Because the whole house is owned by the Rump family. Everybody's name, you've got portraits of generations of the Rump family, and all their names begin with R. So
Jennifer Rump, Riley Rump,
Rutabaga Rump,
because it's percentile to see what portrait you run into.
So that's the goofy aspect, but there's some pretty dangerous stuff that you can run into in there, and a lot of opportunities for your characters to get killed if you're not smart or careful.
And it's not one of those, I mean, it sort of is, you know, with the dungeon levels, first level people stay on the first level of the dungeon sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like that in that the things you run into near the front door are lower levels, but it's very varied. I mean, there's one room you can go into with, a couple of orcs. And there's a room just down the hall with a purple worm in it. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those no win to run.
I'll have to get a hold of that then so we can review it, because Halloween's coming up fast.
Yeah, I got a copy, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, what was it, a couple of years ago I ran it for Halloween?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. When you guys decided, well, remember what I told you about the rooms? They decided to go in the back.
So we missed all of the low-level encounters and just started hitting the ones that were meant for people who had already been in the manor for a while, and you should have leveled up at some point. But we
like
weren't
a
quite ready
like a
for
lich.
Those.
Like a lich. They're second, third level.
It was still fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they screwed themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Good idea, Rusty. I think we'll have to do that for the Halloween show that'll be coming up soon.
All right.
Is there any more emails? And
I believe Rusty's was our last email. I'm very sad now.
Well, let's make up an email. This one's from Tom. And he says, "Hello, my name is Tom." No, I'm kidding.
Sounds a lot like Liz, faux Liz.
Yeah.
That's uncanny.
Yeah, it's just what happens.
Hey, save or die. Tell us more about Doctor Who.
Mike, you only allowed two references.
No, that wasn't me. That was Tom.
Oh, God.
Well, on that note, I guess it's going to say goodbye, because that's the end of the side adventure number two. Keep your emails coming in, and we will continue to do these side adventures as we get the emails. If we don't get a lot of emails, then, well, I guess you're not going to read any emails. No more side adventures.
I'm not sure if that's a threat or what
that's
that
right.
is.
You better send in those emails, people. No, I'm just kidding. SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com. SaveOrDie.info. There's a contact form. Or you can find us in the Dragon's Foot and ask a question there, and we'll gladly read it on the podcast. So stay tuned this upcoming week as Halloween's coming up, and we're doing this show the week of. So, yeah. Thanks for tuning in, and run while you can, save or something or other. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night. Good night.